4. Hey there, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, July 28th, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That would be me.
I'll never forget this night as long as I live. And I'll never forget you for making it possible.
Boy, you're easy. And the show is just getting started. In fact, if you stick around, you'll meet my friend and colleague, everyone's favorite sex health educator, Megan Andoyou. And she's back with us this week for more of her signature sex wisdom. I'm happy to have her again this week for part two of our conversation about what's new and exciting in the field of sexology. But wait, you didn't miss part one of our conversation that appeared here last week at this time, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you got to do is use the site's search function. Type in podcast number 220 and voila. But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search.
You're not much of a bargain, you know. You're conceited and thoughtless and messy.
Messy? Messy? Conceited and thoughtless, for sure, but messy, never. Be sure to check out Megan's fun and informative website, omegan.com, and learn more about her nonprofit organization, the Center for Sexual Pleasure and Health, on their website, thecsph.org. Today's podcast is brought to you by Dr. Dick's Stockroom. You'll find a link to this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, and fetish wear, and gear right there in the header of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the My Stockroom tab. You'll surely enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun. And, I might add, easy. Yesiree sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts in unsavory neighborhoods. And you don't have to worry about leering salespeople scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your computer, that's why. Thanks to Dr. Dick's Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit my stockroom today. You'll be so glad you did.
You're a setup for some gorgeous, wide-eyed young babe.
Speaking of gorgeous, wide-eyed young babe, let's check in with Megan. Okay, on with the show. Megan, welcome back.
Thank you.
I was so afraid that you weren't going to show up. Then I would have to be waiting months and months and months and months again for an opportunity to spend some time with you. You're too damn busy, girlfriend.
I'm sorry. I get distracted very easily by shiny things. Like, oh, I want to do that. But thank you for having me on again.
Oh, well, you know, I'm still, you know, kind of reeling from last week. It went so smoothly and so quickly, and this is the wonderful thing about talking to, you know, one of my peers. You know, I have a great sense of simpatico with you, and it's really wonderful stuff. So let's pick up precisely where we left off then.
Okay.
I want to move on to a slightly different topic. Well, actually, it's a considerably different topic, and that is the notion of sex addiction. And I admit that this is a huge bugaboo for me, and I don't know where you stand. So maybe you could tell us.
Yes, sex addiction. Okay. My professional opinion is that it is far too overdiagnosed.
Oh, thank you.
I just see people's partners saying you have a sex addiction. I see the media pointing and saying you have a sex addiction. And what I don't see is the scientific research that says what sex addiction is.
Right. I so totally agree with you. And yet, one of the things that actually drove me away from a lot of attending a lot of the workshops and conferences and stuff like that for people in our line of work was that it was overloaded with, you know, sex addiction kind of thing. And it almost seemed like, you know, our professional peers were, you know, beating this drum to actually work up business. Because if you have an addiction, then you need professional help.
Do you know how much money they get for sex addiction treatment centers?
Oh.
It's like $15,000 for 10 days.
I know. To my mind, it's a real scandal.
There's a whole organization that's out. I mean, there's organizations for everything, but there's an organization that's just about sex addiction and compulsivity. And I'm like, oh, come on.
And you know, the thing is that I have on numerous occasions, both on my Dr. Dick site and on in Twitter and Facebook and other social media outlets, you know, have spoken my mind very clearly that I actually don't think that there is, you know, something like sex addiction. That's not to say that there isn't obsessive and compulsive behavior. God knows that there is, and people are often out of control in terms of their sexuality, but is it an addiction? I personally don't think so. And I have just been read the Riot Act by, you know, the folks who have quite different opinion than I.
I can only imagine, I've seen it happen.
Yeah.
Standing up and saying, I don't think that this exists, mm-hmm. is a very unpopular stance to have.
Right.
And, you know, on the professional listservs, there's lots of arguments that take place mm-hmm. regarding this topic, and mm-hmm. people leave organizations
yes.
because they're, you know, you don't believe what I believe that
yes.
this. So it's definitely a hot topic.
Right. It's funny because, you know, I was telling this one person just recently that I actually think that I have proof that it isn't, you know, an addiction in that exclusive sense of that word. And that is that when people go to recovery for sex addiction, in quotes, they come out of that experience hoping that someday they're going to reintegrate sexuality back into their lives. But one who goes into therapy or recovery for alcohol or heroin or crystal meth, they don't come out of that experience thinking, you know, okay, in a few months, you know, I'm just going to be able to get right back into, you know, crystal meth, but only do it, you know, in a responsible sort of way. So, you know, I think that, you know, the therapeutic intervention is considerably different for a real addiction as opposed to an obsessive compulsive behavior.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the other things, too, is when people get addicted to things, they have physical withdrawal.
Exactly.
And that's not happening when you experience a compulsion or you stop having sex. There's no, you know, dry heaving. There's no convulsions. There's none of that. I think it's just a way for our culture to kind of shame sex about sex.
And then there's a layer on top of that, is there not, in terms of celebrity sex scandals? Because, you know, here is this misguided person who has fallen in with, you know, and let his or her life, you know, be ruined by, you know, his out-of-control sexual expression. Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah, I really think that that's the only way our public knows how to openly talk about sex mm-hmm. is if we can demonize another person.
Right.
And, you know, that can elicit great conversations to take place
right.
that might not normally. But, you know, I think that we're way too, you know, quick to point the finger. And it's basically, I think it's like the Scarlet Letter, you
right.
know?
And how else are we to explain the fact that some people have, you know, an enormous libido and have capacity to love and express their, you know, themselves with lots of different people, which we talked about last week briefly about, you know, that humankind have this genetic disposition to having multiple partners.
Yeah.
So, you know, somehow along the line, you know, if somebody is actually following through on, you know, the genetic dictates of our species that somehow, you know, something has gone awry. Like, he is such a nice man and he's such a talented athlete and a wonderful role model for our kids. Too bad he has this terrible addiction.
Yeah, you know, I think that the real problem is the lack of communication or honesty.
Right, that's true. That's true enough.
If you are interested in being with other people, you know, it's the lying that's the real issue.
That's so true.
Talk about having an open relationship.
Yeah, that's so true. Absolutely. And quit demonizing, you know, the sexual expression.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I also noticed that you have a whole section on your site devoted to how to pick out sex toys. So I'd like to talk about sex toys if we can.
Sure.
Or as we used to call them, marital aids.
Yes. Yes, you guys might have said them. I don't say marital aids anymore. But rock on with yourself.
All righty. So what are some of the health concerns that people should be conscious of in terms of picking out sex toys for both him and her?
I think that's one of the – there's a couple different health concerns. One is know what you're buying. Like, what are you planning on using this for? Because there are way too many anal accidents that occur because you stuck something inappropriately up your butt. And – you know, I don't know if you saw the study that came out in January, but it's found that most people wait 2 to 3 days with something lodged in their ass before they go to the emergency room.
Yes.
I mean, you know, so that's my
big... Because it's the walk of shame, don't you know?
Yeah, it is. And a lot of my friends are medical providers, and I cannot tell you how many x-ray images I have been sent on my iPhone. Because...
How disturbing is that?
Yeah, especially on New Year's Eve, you know, you're not.
I fell down
that.
The stairs and I landed on this.
Yeah, so know what you're buying, like what you're planning on using it for, and also know what type of material is out there, because certain materials, you know, can harbor infections if you develop one.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, and I'm a huge proponent of this, I keep telling everybody, you know, on Dr. Dick and Dr. Dick's sextoyreviews.com that, you know, just because a package says something doesn't necessarily make it true.
Yeah.
And, you know, because there is no, like, consumer advocacy group that is watching out for us in terms of, you know, product development or materials and that kind of stuff. So the conscientious consumer is the front line and possibly the only line for, you know, getting good toys.
Yeah, and that's because they're still illegal technically in 4 states.
That's,
I mean,
so
Alabama repassed that law this year. So
I know. Oh dear. So are you a proponent of sex toys as a means to enhancing couple play?
Or self-play, yeah.
Ah, right, good.
Yes.
But, you know, a self-play is a whole lot more understandable to a lot more people than couples. You know, like, oh, I can pleasure myself with this, but, you know, should I introduce it to, you know, my marital bed?
Gotcha, yeah. So, you know, yesterday I was talking to someone who has a partner who's dealing with premature ejaculation issues.
Mm, good.
And she's very, very angry about it. And she said how the sex stops after, you know, he ejaculates. Right. And I looked at her and I was like, have you thought about incorporating a strap-on? Because she really likes the feeling of fullness in her vagina. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I never thought about that. I was like, you can still get that contact of him on top of you. You could still have that feeling of fullness. Mm-hmm. And you're not angry at him because he just ejaculated. You can keep going. So they can be used in various different ways.
And male masturbation toys, like the Fleshlight and the Tantra Stroker, for example, are means to helping men overcome premature ejaculation. If they can learn how to control their ejaculatory response with using a toy, they're going to be much more successful with a partner.
Absolutely. I think sex toys or sexual aids, whatever you want to call them, are amazing, and they can help people out.
Yeah.
You know, they were developed for the medical community.
Right.
And
it's so true. Exactly.
You know?
Like
and
penis pumps, for example.
Yes, exactly. Or the aneros. Those were all medical devices that were used. And then people are like, oh, I like how I feel with that.
So let's make one in purple.
Because that's the popular color.
What about green sex toys? What does that mean?
So green sex toys are toys that generally do not use batteries, so they're rechargeable.
Right.
Yes. Although I did recently learn that a lot of the green sex toys are silicone,
which
is a material that is safe for the body.
Yeah.
But silicone almost never degrades.
Yeah.
And so it stays around kind of like styrofoam.
Yeah, right.
So I think another interesting conversation is like, you know, how do we classify green sex toys?
Yeah.
Is it just the rechargeable or is it the material that's made
too? That's so true. And, you know, in terms of the rechargeable kind of thing, you know, since a lot of, like 99% of the sex toys that vibrate are battery driven, my advice to the people that talk to me about this is get rechargeable batteries. That way you make any toy a rechargeable toy.
Oh, I like that. That's being crafty.
That is being crafty.
Yeah.
And besides, interestingly enough, I think that, you know, rechargeable batteries will serve you you and your toy much longer than a rechargeable toy. And I'm hoping that there's going to be some research published on this relatively soon, but we'll have to wait to see that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some sex trends in the popular culture. One of the big things that's going on right now is the circumcision debate. Do you have a thought about that?
Oh, I have a lot of thoughts about that.
Yay! Share them, please.
Don't touch someone's body and cut body parts off without their permission.
Good for you. Period.
That's it. That's it. Stop it. Just stop it.
Right.
And, you know, I think our culture gets very, very upset about female circumcision.
Oh, I guess.
And it's interesting that we don't approach male circumcision in half of the anger that we do with female circumcision. Now, they are different in terms of how much is removed and all of that and how it takes place, but it's still cutting off someone's body part without their permission.
Right.
And
people say to me, you know, well, you know, it's a health issue. You know, it's a hygiene issue. And I said, wouldn't it be easier just to teach them how to clean themselves rather than cutting stuff off?
Yeah. I mean, when people bring that up to me, I'm like, we don't cut off inner labia, do we?
Yeah.
Because there's folds in between the labia, you know, the labia. We don't cut that off because it makes it cleaner. But if you don't wash, you're going to get stuff that builds up under there.
So true. So true. What's going on with the G-spot debate these days?
There was an article that was published that said that the G-spot didn't exist.
Right.
And
that was that study out of the UK that was really terribly flawed. But
yes. And, you know, this actually brings up a lot of debate at home with my partner and I because he knows how to read studies and we have different opinions on how that study was conducted.
Right.
But in my professional opinion, the G-spot exists.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody likes it played with.
Mm-hmm.
But it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can stimulate it if you want to. I don't think that it necessarily... I get a little irritated with the magazines that talk about the G-spot every freaking month because then people develop, you know, fear about the fact that they haven't found their G-spot.
Right.
Or
and real performance anxiety. Like,
exactly.
If I don't have a G-spot orgasm as opposed to a vaginal one or a clitoral one or, you know, one that falls down from the sky, then I'm less than.
Exactly. And so while I think it's great that people can explore their bodies in different ways, I don't think that it needs to be shouted to people as much as it is because there are other parts of the body that do exist. The G-spot is one of them, but it's not the only one.
Right.
And talking about it solely can provide, you know, performance anxiety, like you said.
Absolutely. Where do you stand on female ejaculation besides out of the way? Sorry.
Oh, I totally recommend puppy pads.
I love it. You knocked me out.
You know, I think that in porn, which is where we really popularize female ejaculation, we've got squirters, and not everybody is a squirter. Mm-hmm. And I think that the main thing is that, you know, some females ejaculate, mm-hmm. but it may not come out the way that you see on film. So
maybe that is faked.
Yeah, or that it's faked, right. Because a lot of that is water tricks.
and it's porn.
Right, and not water sports, but water tricks.
You know, kind of thing that you do with your surfboard.
Right.
Only completely different.
So,
I love it.
So, you know, I think that the studies show between 10 to 60% of women can ejaculate. And that's a huge range, but,
yes, so.
You know, you're like, what's the point of this study? But at least it exists.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I think that, I don't think that as many women ejaculate as they could because mm-hmm. they stop themselves from doing
right.
it.
I think so, too. And, you know, there's an embarrassment about that kind of thing. And I've heard a lot of women tell me that, you know, they're not absolutely sure that that's not urine.
Yeah. There's a
you
big
know, if it's something's sugar. Coming out of me with that force and that that amount, you're going to have to point to some place in my body where I store that is not my bladder.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, pitchers can come in handy. But it's funny because we don't do the same thing when it comes to male ejaculation. Yeah. Like, it comes out of the same exact hole, but we're not like, oh, where's that coming from?
Well, because we have a sense of where that comes from. I mean, a prostate and, you know, seminal vesicles and whatnot. But so, and we never see gushers of, you know, cum. God knows, we would love to see that. We'd love to. I mean, and porn doesn't even fake it like that.
No, they don't.
Although, you know, a little mayonnaise does go a long way. I know, because I was in the industry. So we touched on this last week a little bit, but I'd like to go there again this week, and that is the idea of teenage sexuality. Mm-hmm. What about sex education? There is age-appropriate sex education. What is that exactly?
So age-appropriate sex education is giving information that is not over their head.
Uh-huh.
So something that can be comprehended allows them to not feel overwhelmed and elicits, you know, conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so you're going to teach something to a six-year-old completely differently than you would teach something to a 15-year-old.
Right. You know, my rule of thumb is when I'm talking to parents about this very thing, I always suggest them, they ask their kids, well, what do you know or what do you think you know about that? So they will basically tell you, you know, I think fucking is when, you know, somebody, you know, puts his finger in somebody's butthole.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, but at least you have a starting point then. So you know that the kid knows something about anatomy. He's confused or she's confused and that kind of stuff. Or where do babies come from? Well, what do you think you know about that?
It's a great way to figure out what's going on is to ask them questions because it also gives you time to silently freak out if you're freaking out.
Yes. And, you know, let them, you know, set the agenda. You know, and maybe sometimes that's not what fucking means. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it can be very simple,
and you may not necessarily have to go down the road and, you know, spill the beans, as it were. But interestingly enough, good. So you do think it's a parent's responsibility to continually educate their offspring about human sexuality. Yes?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's a parent's responsibility. Parents are the primary sex educators. Even mm-hmm. if they're not talking about it, they're talking about it in nonverbal ways. So it's, you know, if you want your children to have some like values, you need to be able to explore topics with them. And it may make you uncomfortable, but that's the only way that you can help them make their own healthy choices.
Right. And besides, it's going to make you more comfortable by talking about it. You know, pushing past your discomfort is the thing. You know, you aren't going to get past discomfort by not dealing with it.
Yeah. No, I've been in this field almost 13 years now, and my parents finally started finally started talking to me around 11 years after, you know, me blabbing away. She starts asking questions, and we can have, like, I had a conversation with my dad last month about pornography, and it was a healthy adult conversation about it. And before he would never, ever, ever, he just got angry. So talking about things elicits other people to talk about them and gives them permission. And it may be challenging, but it's helpful.
I was 20 years a therapist, a sex therapist, and before my mother died, she used to say things like, well, she's having female problems. What do you mean by that, dear?
My favorite is when people are like, when women are like, I had some stuff removed. I'm like, what did you have removed? I don't know. The doctor just took it all out. I'm like, okay, you should know what organs are left in your body because that's a health issue.
It's so true. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Or, you know, it's down there.
Yes.
Or it hurts down there, or it doesn't feel good down there, or it does feel good down there.
Right.
What is down there? Have you taken a look lately? Some women wouldn't be able to pick their genitals out of a lineup. They're so estranged from them.
Yes, absolutely. Mirrors, freestanding mirrors are amazing tools in helping. Because, you know, with vulvas, you can't look at someone else's vulva in a sly manner like you can do with a dick. You just can't. Like, you have to get your head in between your friend's legs in order to do that. And, you know.
But, you know, that all gets down to the whole modesty thing. And, you know, ought I be doing that? I mean, if I look at myself in the mirror, am I being immodest? Well, you know, if you're checking for, you know, if everything is working correctly, that has nothing to do with modesty. That has to do with, you know, health consciousness.
Absolutely. I like that. I never thought about that in terms of like a modesty issue.
I hear that from women all the time. And again, you know, that harkens back to, you know, religious training. I used to hear that in the confessional all the time, you know, that, oh my goodness, you know, I accidentally brushed myself down there and now I feel dirty or I, you know, have committed a sin. And I went, oh, poor baby, my goodness. Let's talk a little bit about sex and aging before we conclude. Are you seeing any rise in interest in terms of andropause as opposed to menopause these days?
I'm seeing a little bit, but I don't think as much as what I notice on the West. Like, I notice the West Coast talks a lot about that, but it's not something that...
Because we're old out here.
Oh, no. Got some youngins out there, and we've got some oldies out here.
Oh, okay.
You know, we've got the Boston Medical Center, which focuses in on male sexuality issues, and they do a lot of work with testosterone and stuff like that. But I don't notice that as much as I see you guys talking about it. It's very interesting.
I write about it a lot because a lot of the guys that write to me are experiencing andropause, and they don't know it. They don't know the word, and if they would go to their physician and the physician diagnoses them as depressive and are giving them antidepressants, or if they actually are clever enough to think that they might be having some andropausal issues and they hand out Viagra like it's candy, that is not addressing the issue any more than, you know, a woman who is menopausal goes to her doctor and he hands her, you know, a tube of lube and say, you know, have a ball. There's other stuff going on.
I think that this is an area that we're just starting to really address as a culture of aging and sex. Yeah. And, you know,
because we're not supposed to after a particular age.
After 30.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm doing it wrong. Thanks for winning that out, Megan.
Hey, honey, I'm over that age too, so I'm
assumed that you weren't. That's all. Anyhow, who are your inspirations and your sexual heroes, if you have any?
Who are my sexual heroes? I would say Marty Klein is one because he's very outspoken says things that other people don't have the courage, I think, to say. Betty Dodson the same reason, and Carol Queen. Those are some of my, I'll get a little like flustered if I get near them or
they're they're huge personalities in our field, and you know, and people who have really paved the way for younger folks, and you know, oftentimes paid with you know a bit of their soul, and so my hat is off to each and every one of those people. They are big heroes of mine as well.
Yeah.
So, what does the future hold for you and your work?
Well, I started a center for sexuality for people, the public, to come in and learn about sexuality.
No
so,
kidding.
Yeah. So, I'm really proud of it, and we do classes, and we have a lending library, and we have free events, and we have
wow.
the community members, we have volunteers, and we have interns.
What's so the name? Do I even know it?
It's the Center for Sexual Pleasure and Health.
Oh, right. Exactly that. Absolutely. Yeah. I know that.
Yeah. So that's a big project that I've been undertaking. And
is it nonprofit?
It is applying for its nonprofit status.
Oh, good for you, darling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm very excited with it. It's a nice place to go to work.
Hmm.
And my partner and I are going to start doing some sexual studies together.
Oh, great.
So he's going to, you know, gear up all the medical lingo and all that sort of stuff, mm-hmm. and I'm going to gather the participants, and we're going to put some good research out there.
Good, good, good.
Yeah, so those are some of my big projects that I'm doing.
Well, our industry is in good hands.
I try. I have people that I look up to, like yourself, you know, that guide me along the way and help me figure out, you know, what next steps need to happen.
Great. Good, good, good. So before we conclude, will you give us your website address again and walk us around a bit?
Sure. So you can find me at omegan, like O-H, like, oh, Megan, .com. That's what my mom said to me when I first told her that I was going to be a sex educator. And people have... I didn't realize, like, the double meaning. So
uh-huh.
someone's like, oh, Megan. And I was like, what are you doing?
You're a freak.
You're a freak. That's not what I meant by that. Oh, it does sound like that, though, doesn't it? So you can find out, like, where I'll be. You could also go to the center's website, which is the CSPH, and see more of community involvement. And
we'll have links to that on the postings for these podcasts?
Yes.
Cool beans.
Thank you so much.
You are a sweetheart doll, baby, and you are an inspiration to me and to so many people that we know in common, and I wish you the very best in all the work that you're doing, and we will be in touch throughout the next decade.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you.
You're
be
welcome.
Well.
Oh, you too.
Bye.
Bye.
What a delightful show. Don't you just love Megan? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stockroom. Listen up, you guys. If your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and whose doesn't? I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself or the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you're looking for in my stockroom, you'd better just call off the search right now.
We get home, you're going to get into one of those girdles and act for 2.5 hours.
Now you're getting into the spirit of things. Listen, Dr. Dick has put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. Not sure what to buy? Take a look at my new product review site, DrDickSexToyReviews.com. I and the Dr. Dick review crew review all kinds of adult-related goodies, sex toys for sure, but also condoms, lubes, herbal products, fetish gear and wear, as well as educational and enrichment videos. Don't miss a single one. And be sure to check out DrDickSexToyReviews.com. It's chock full of swell gift-giving ideas. Look for the My Stockroom tab right there on the front page of DrDickSexAdvice.com. And look for all of Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health, subcategory Sexuality, or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe and feel free to leave a comment when you do.
I love you too. Good night, darling.
Good night. And until next time, remember, sex is good, and good sex, why, that's even better. Over and out.